Welcome back to the show. Today we've got a very interesting topic to discuss, and it's all about the affordability crisis. Let's face it, the last time most of us did our shop, we probably came home and we complained to the spouse about the cost of living and how expensive things have become. And the latest Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index, which indicates mounting pressure on household finances in South Africa, certainly underlines this quite effectively. Joining us now is Dr. Roelof Botha, the index's compiler and a noted independent economist. Dr. Botha, thanks again for being with us today. Let's start by understanding the background of the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. It's still fairly new. Can you just tell us a little bit more about how the index is designed and what it really seeks to measure?
Yes, certainly. In my discussions with Johan Jelitli, the CEO of Altron FinTech, over the years we've gotten to know each other. It became quite clear that he was, as myself as well, rather frustrated at the fact that you have a plethora of indices and surveys and so-called research, which sometimes contradict each other. A very good example, I think, in the past was, you know, billing plans are passed, the value of that declines, and then a message goes out to the media, oh, this is terrible. But the next month, the value of houses that have been completed increases. And to cancel this out, we decided to compile this index. It consists of 20 different quantifiable indicators. We don't ask people, how do you feel today? And if your team has just lost FA Cup semi-final over the weekend, then you don't feel so good. All of them are related to quantifiable data on sources of income or asset values of South African households. And it's a composite weighted index. Obviously, the mainstay of your average household income in South Africa is salaries and wages. So that has, by a long shot, the highest weighting. But there are other sources of income. For instance, dividends via your direct or indirect investments on the stock exchange. So we've got unit trust assets, which is a whopping large number, by the way. We're talking trillions of rand here. And that gives you, that's one of our indicators, and that gives you an idea of whether, you know, the households can expect some increase in that value, that they can cash in on most unit trusts at any point in time. So everything that has a bearing on your financial resilience is included here that we could possibly find.
It's so interesting you mentioned that. I'm here at Alex Forbes, and a very interesting statistic that was just shared was that two-thirds of South Africans who are in formal employment are part of some kind of provident or pension fund at an employer level, or alternatively have RAs. Now, it sounds like an impressive number, two-thirds. That's two-thirds of those in employment. What about all of those who are not in employment? And then you start to get a much fuller picture of household wealth, and clearly we need to do more to encourage resilience and savings. Let's just start by understanding the latest results, which indicate that household financial resilience increased by 1.4% in the quarter, but declined by 1.1% year on year. What do you think is driving this decline in household financial resilience?
Yes, just an interesting point. If you look at the GDP data for the fourth quarter of last year, exactly the opposite happened. There was a marginal quarter-on-quarter decline. We had a marginal increase with the Altron FinTech Index, and there was an increase of 2% year-on-year in real GDP, whereas with our index, there was a decline of 1.1%. And I think this Altron Index is definitely closer to the bone as far as the position of households is concerned, because it does capture all the potential major sources of revenue and, of course, asset values as well. And what struck me, and this is unbelievable, but because on a year-on-year basis, there's a spread of almost 60%, 6-0, between the percentage increase of the best-performing indicator and the worst-performing indicator. And that gives you an indication of the volatility that exists right now. But the main driver, if you look at the weighting, the main driver of the fact that a 1.1% year-on-year decline is not the end of the world, was the fact that employment increased substantially in the public sector and in the private sector. And then there were interesting ones like the credit impairments by banks. We used the reciprocal to move it in the right direction, the index. So that had a positive impact. And also the ratio of household income to debt, which tells you that your median household in South Africa, they're actually managing their finances a little bit better, and they've probably sold assets or they've cashed in on long-term investments, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, I suppose it's context-specific, but if it means you can stay out of debt and rather raise liquidity in other ways rather than getting into a usurious debt trap, it speaks to maybe an increasing financial awareness or sophistication amongst households. I mean, what do you draw as an inference from that particular finding?
Desperation, unfortunately,
yeah.
Because I mean, every second person I speak to, Michael, tells me that they're paying anything between 2,000 and 10,000 rand a month more on their mortgage bonds. And if you're a salaried employee, this is really tough. So where are you going to, you know, find the money to fix your car if it breaks down? I just had to fix my gearbox on my Bucky, which is 17 years old. It had to happen eventually, I suppose. I mean, this is a huge outlay, quite frankly. So what has happened here, and this is actually frightening news. It's good for the index because long-term insurance surrenders, the value of long-term insurance surrenders increased by 27% year on year. Now, this is good for the index because it means that there's huge amounts of money, thousands of rand, sometimes hundreds of thousands of rand coming into households, into the bank accounts, but you're surrendering a long-term insurance policy. So it's not a good financial decision with regard to the future.
And ultimately, if we want to develop a deeper resilience, you want more households insuring their primary assets against any kind of risk or emergency event. I mean, that, to me, long-term speaks to a weakening of household resilience. If you're not paying out insurance or you're cashing in those policies. You've also mentioned, I mean, if you take a longer view here, that the average annual improvement since 2014 is only 1.2%. So, I mean, we've basically gone nowhere. In fact, gone backwards if you take inflation and everything else and adjust for that. So this is a clear indication of the economy's underperformance. What do you see as some of the underlying reasons for that underperformance over the last 8 to 9 years?
Well, since the index's base period, as you've indicated, is first quarter of 2014. So what happened, you know, not long after that first quarter? South Africans became aware of the concept of state capture for the first time, which led ultimately to Nhlanhla Nene's demise. He got fired. I actually gave a presentation to himself and his board at Debe Investments the other day, and we had a jolly good laugh about the old days. And business confidence started dropping, and South Africa was underperforming ever since. So that lost decade, as Trevor Manuel, as I think, termed it, cost us dearly, and we're still paying the price for it. And then came COVID, shortly after. Cyril Ramaphosa got elected. There was an uptick then. There was a bit of life in the index, and then all of a sudden came COVID. And in these circumstances, it's just impossible, especially if you're starting to count the cost of government mismanagement of the economy, the decay of the infrastructure, which they seem it seems as if they don't know how to fix the roads outside of the Western Cape, where they've mastered the art of fixing a pothole.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they must export those skills to the other provinces.
And it also mentions a decade of state capture and public sector mismanagement between the years of 2009 and 2018, obviously as a key factor affecting household finances. And often we talk about state capture in sometimes abstract terms. Can you explain how this has impacted the economy and households?
Well, in fact, if you consider the cost of state capture, which a few economists have tried to quantify, myself as well, and associate of mine, Keith Lockwood, who teaches at Gibbs, a longstanding associate of mine, previous chief economist of Chamber of Business. And Keith, a couple of years ago, arrived at a figure of 2.5 trillion rand. My own calculation, which is based on what South Africa's economy would have been worth today if during that lost decade and subsequently we had grown at the average rate of comparable peer economies, who have broadly the same resource endowment, who are to some extent dependent on international commodity exports, etc., per capita income levels more or less on the same level. And my calculation shows 3 trillion rand. The bottom line is that if it had not been for Mr. Zuma and his band of thieves, then these 8 million people that do not have jobs in South Africa today would have had employment. It's as easy as that.
8 million people. I mean, if you put that figure, that cold, harsh reality on the table, it really makes one's blood boil that the first major state capture case has been bungled by the NPA. Heads should roll inside the NPA, and the judge was scathing last week in that particular faux pas, drop ball, absolute mess, call it what you will. Looking ahead, and I mean, you mentioned that in real terms, the average monthly remuneration in South Africa has declined by 11.4% over the past year. And it really tallies with what Capitec CEO Harry Faree was talking to me about last week in his presentation. They've got 20 million customers. They're seeing a rise in debt service costs, and they're not seeing a commensurate rise in incomes into their accounts. Can you explain what's at play here? And broadly speaking, what are the implications now for households, given that we have a Reserve Bank that seems hell-bent on hiking in lockstep with the US Fed, despite our circumstances being markedly different?
Yes, wow. Okay, let's look at the average salaries. That's an interesting one. They are the average salary for all sectors, agriculture, informal and formal sector, has declined from about 18,500 rand a month in the fourth quarter of 2021. That's a year ago. You know, the Altron index a year ago, that declined to 16,000, almost 400 rand. So that's a decline of more than 2,000 rand a month, every month, in the average income. So what has happened here, and I've picked this up in my own business endeavors, where I do employ on a part-time basis a number of people who are not highly skilled. And the request is that I should not pay their wages into their bank accounts, because that disqualifies them from getting the COVID grant. So there's all kinds of factors that are at play here. So personally, I think, you know, that this decline from 18,500 to almost 16,500 may be exaggerated in practice. But it just goes to show, you know, people are smart out there. They make a plan. As far as the Reserve Bank is concerned, Michael, you're intimately aware of my frustration with the Monetary Policy Committee. Here you have five individuals. We've got more than 60 million people in this country.